Hello, everyone, and welcome to Managed Healthcare Executives' monthly What's on Your Mind podcast. In this podcast series, editors will check in with members of the Managed Healthcare Executive Editorial Advisory Board and ask them what's on their mind. Some of these topics will include the challenges they and their organizations are facing, the uphill battles, and the success stories, the short horizon, and the longer game. We're going to pick their brains to give our listeners valuable information and insight into healthcare today. Hello, readers and listeners of Managed Healthcare Executive. Our guest in this month's episode of the What's on Your Mind podcast is Margaret Murray, founding CEO of the Association for Community Affiliated Plans, or ACAP, and a longtime member of Managed Healthcare Executives Editorial Advisory Board. Murray is an expert on Medicaid and healthcare policies that affect people with low incomes. In the interview, she discusses ACAP's growth, its legislative wins, Medicaid redetermination, junk insurance, and state Medicaid programs carving out pharmacy benefits.
So I did really want to, I guess it dawned on me the other day that we are a quarter into the 21st century. You're roughly my age, maybe a little bit younger. I mean, I'm still used to being in the 20th century, you know, it's like crazy. So, 20th century America, you know, but now we're in the 21st century America. So I am interested in maybe getting you just to reflect a little bit about the fact that we are, you know, roughly a quarter of the way into the 21st century. And I'm just curious, you know, pulling back like that, what is on your mind? What are the challenges for your organization and your members when, you know, a fair amount of the calendar has, of the 21st century calendar has gone by?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And because of the pandemic, ACAP was not able to officially celebrate its 20th anniversary, but we were actually founded on the first year of this century, 2000. And so we are now at year 22, but thinking ahead to our 25th anniversary, and we're going through strategic planning. So we've definitely been thinking about what ACAP has accomplished over the last 22 plus years. And we had started off as a trade association of 17 community health center plans, and now we're up to 68, what we call safety net plans. And over that time period, we've had a couple really major congressional wins that have affected the whole Medicaid industry and Medicaid managed care industry, starting with the inclusion of the Drug Rebate Equalization Act in the Affordable Care Act. That was really our first big legislative win that enabled the states to get drug rebates for people that were in Medicaid managed care plans. And it resulted in many states deciding to carve drugs into managed care, as opposed to carving them out to get the rebate, which had a benefit to beneficiaries, because then the health plan really had control over the whole person care and could use the drug data to know who was pregnant, who, you know, all the things that health plans do with the drug data. That was in 2010. And then in 2017, we fought to sustain the Affordable Care Act, especially the Medicaid expansion. And we had a whole campaign called Medicaid is Us, which resulted in over 50,000 emails and Facebook postings to Congress. And since then, we've had a couple other major wins, including helping to require that some of the quality measures be reported by the states to CMS. We think it's really important that the feds know what they're buying through Medicaid and Medicaid managed care. And so right now, states for the first time will have to provide kids quality measures and behavioral health measures to the federal government. And then lastly, we just had a recent one where the as part of the omnibus bill, now states will have to cover children continuously in Medicaid for 12 months. So that was a huge win for ACAP, for the program, and especially for the 44 million kids who are on Medicaid. So those are the things that we have accomplished over the last 20 some years, and have much more to look forward to in the next 22 years.
So do people who aren't familiar with the various insurance groups and whatnot, you're the Association of Community Affiliated Plans. And are you the only health insurance group where your brief, your portfolio is exclusively Medicaid managed care? I mean, are you the sort of the front end of the spear on Medicaid managed care issues?
Well, we represent about 40% of the population that is in Medicaid managed care. So we do represent a big chunk. There is another association called Medicaid Health Plans of America, and they represent not just the nonprofit plans. Our plans are all not-for-profit and all serve Medicaid. But our plans also are in the Medicare program, serving low-income dual eligibles and in the marketplace. Medicaid Health Plans of America does focus solely on Medicaid, but has both for-profit and not-for-profit plans. So, and we have members in common and work very well and very closely together.
Is there anything about representing nonprofits that creates a different set of issues and interests for your members as distinct to the other Medicaid managed group? Is the fact that you're representing nonprofits sort of shape your agenda?
It does. Our plans always put the mission first. Of course, margin is important, but mission is really the underlying piece. And we have some wonderful examples over time. I know at one point during one of the debates, maybe in 2010, our plans were supportive of a maintenance of effort provision that might have resulted in states, if they had to keep people on Medicaid, they might have made cuts in rates. But our plan said it was more important to keep people on the Medicaid program. So that's, I think, a good example that mission was the most important thing, and the mission is to keep people covered. Our plans are also, and have since the very beginning, some of our plans now go back 40 years, have been very focused on social determinants of health. Now we have a term for it, and actually ACAP just started a center related to social determinants of health, but our plans have been working on it since the beginning, because oftentimes they were founded by community health centers, children's hospitals, local governments, public hospitals. So that really, the issues related to ensuring that people are having their social determinants of health addressed has been core to our plan since the beginning.
This isn't really what we part of discuss what we discussed prior to videotaping, but I'm curious. I've read a fair amount about oral health and dental health. Is that an issue that you've taken up? You know, there's been people have pointed out carving out dental and oral health from the rest of the health is, you know, from the person's point of view, doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Right. But yes, because so many states do carve dental out, we at ACAP have not really addressed many dental issues. Although we support people being obviously covered for dental, it's mandatory for children's coverage, but would certainly support states that want to do it for adults as well. But I'm not sure what the number is, but probably the majority of our plans are not covered, are not capitated for dental.
I'm glad you mentioned the omnibus bill, because I believe that bill ended something that got created during COVID, which was continuous enrollment. And as I understand it, it reduced the administrative burden tremendously, perhaps for plans like yours, that people were just continually enrolled in Medicaid. And I believe that's ending in March. And are your members concerned about the end of continuous enrollment? And I guess it's called redetermination, deciding whether people are in fact eligible for benefits. Is this going to be a big challenge in 23?
It will be a big challenge. And it was really one of the smartest things that the Congress did way back in, I guess, 2020, one of those first bills where they said to states that if you want the enhanced financial support through the what we call the FMAP, states had to agree to keep people on Medicaid and not redetermine anyone. So some people have been on now for 2.5 years. Medicaid has grown tremendously. There's 90 million people on Medicaid. But yes, states can start as of February 1st, actually starting to do outreach to people to tell them that they need to certify that they are still eligible. States have, I think it's actually almost 14 months though, to be able to go through that whole process. But as of April 1st, I think that's the first state that some people might lose eligibility. And so the plans and the states are working very closely together along with CMS. In fact, we have a call with CMS this week specifically for them to talk to the plans about what they're doing and what they need. So our plans are working diligently to update the contact information, which, as you may know, people move a lot, low-income people, and so their information does change. Health plans tend to have the most recent, certainly more recent data than states. And so states and plans are working together to make sure that the health plans can give the information to the states. But it's complicated because sometimes the state data with the old addresses overwrites the data that the new information the plans have. But plans are being very creative to reach out to people, reminding them that they need to update their addresses, reminding them that redetermination is coming up. Some of the plans in states are working together. In Rhode Island, they've got a postcard basically that all the plans in Rhode Island have agreed upon with a QR code that people can, click on. Mm-hmm. And this card is going to be given out at provider offices, at the pharmacies, any place where people on Medicaid might be. And the plans are all working together so that the providers and pharmacies aren't being bombarded by different messages and the individuals aren't. Same in Maryland, I believe that the plans are working together on some type of campaign. So there's a lot of work going into making sure that people know that they have to be redetermined, that they need to update their addresses. But many of our plans are concerned they might lose 10 to 25% of their members over the next year.
Yeah, particularly if people sort of have fallen out of the habit of having to, because it's an annual obligation ordinarily, correct?
It is, yes. Mm-hmm. Typically, people are being redetermined. And one of the things we want to make sure is that there's not a bolus of people that are redetermined at one point in the beginning of 23, because then every year they'll have this big number of people in the early part of the year that are being redetermined. So states and plans really want to make sure that the people are being redetermined throughout the year so that we don't have a problem going forward. And they want to make sure they're reaching out to the people who are most vulnerable, children, pregnant women, people with chronic conditions. So there's a lot of thought going into how states will be doing the redetermination process.
Did I understand you correctly, though, that this whole redetermination does not apply to children?
No, what it does apply to children, but the rules in Medicaid are that states do have to redetermine people once a year. But if people's income changes during that year, and the states find out about that through wage match and things like that, people can lose their eligibility during the year. And so what the law was just changed to say that regardless of any income changes for children in Medicaid, they will be on for 12 months. Families' incomes do change pretty regularly at that level because they're a lot of times minimum wage workers or hourly workers. They get some more hours, or there's 5 pay periods as opposed to 4 in a month. And so income is pretty volatile at the lower levels. And people do find that they go to the pharmacy and they're not eligible. So it's a big issue for families and people, even parents that are watching it closely, oftentimes will reduce their hours to make sure that they don't lose eligibility, especially if they have a sick kid. So this will take away that from them. They'll know that once their child is on, from the point of redetermination, so these children right now will be redetermined at some point in 23, but then they'll be on for a whole year.
I see. So there'll still be a redetermination.
There still will be redetermination, right? The clock.
But it has a 12-year life for kids.
12-month life, yeah. Now, this law doesn't actually go into effect until a year from now, but half of the states already have 12-month redetermination for children. And for those states that don't, we are going to certainly strongly encourage them to pass the law. They're going to have to do it in a year anyway, so pass the law now and just make it easier for the families.
We've done a lot of stories about the Inflation Reduction Act and its healthcare provisions, and of course, it's gotten a lot of attention. Most of what's been written about has been about Medicare price negotiation, insulin caps, which I think apply only to people in Medicare. The bill was, I think, trimmed back a little bit in some of those provisions. Are there some healthcare provisions of the Inflation Reduction Act that are going to affect your organization and your members and ultimately Medicare beneficiaries, something that, you know, that your group is sort of working on?
Yeah, one of the big provisions in the Inflation Reduction Act was a provision that extended what we call the enhanced advanced premium tax credits as part of the marketplace. During COVID, the federal government increased the subsidies for people who were on the marketplace, and they were going to go away in this year, 23. But we had been championing it. Our members had been up in Congress, or at least virtually in meeting with people from Congress, to say we really need to make sure that those enhanced premium tax credits are extended. And they were, unfortunately, only for 3 years. We were hoping to make them permanent, but it will ensure that nobody pays more than, I think it's 8.5% of their income for healthcare. So even higher income people, oftentimes that's one of the things that when people criticize the Affordable Care Act, they say, well, it's not affordable for certain people, even at 400, 500% of poverty. I know my own family's premiums, which we luckily get from my employer, but are $25,000 because we have five people on it. So that's a big chunk of any family's income. And so this will ensure that all families have a cap on how much they have to pay for Obamacare coverage.
That's going to lead to, the enrollment, I think, in ACA plans is at an all-time high. The subsidies presumably will keep those numbers high. Doesn't then the sort of dynamic mean that therefore there's less, at least in the Medicaid expansion states, there will be fewer people going to Medicaid for coverage because the safe states, the subsidies for the ACA plans are enriched? I mean, isn't it kind of a relief? Isn't that creates a bit of a safety valve for your organizations?
Well, because it's all based on your income, anyone under 138% of poverty in any state that did the expansion is going to be on Medicaid. People over that will be on the marketplace. Going back to the redeterminations, anyone who is in a Medicaid plan that also is in the where the plan is also offering marketplace coverage, they'll be able to reach out to people who are losing Medicaid coverage. And so hopefully people will be able to easily glide from Medicaid to the marketplace. The real problem is going to be in places like Florida, where people who had maybe been on Medicaid, their income has gone up a little bit, but it hasn't gone up enough for the marketplace. They're going to find out about that, what we call the Medicaid gap. And it's significant for 2 million people. I'm hoping that maybe that will bring a little bit more pressure on states like Texas and Florida to do the Medicaid expansion, because a lot of people who now have been used to having Medicaid coverage are going to find out once again that they're ineligible and they're not eligible for the marketplace because they fall into that income gap.
In terms of big policy and sort of moving back to the big picture, when I sort of came into this area of healthcare, expanding coverage was the major issue. And, the ACA through the combination of the exchange plans and Medicaid expansion, which as a result of the court decision, you know, has happened on a state-by-state basis as opposed to nationwide. It in broad strokes, it seems to have tackled the coverage issue, aside from the non-expansion states. I don't mean to minimize that, and there are large population states, so like Texas and Florida. However, I'm just wondering, you know, just as somebody who's been in this field forever, for a long time, I should say.
Forever, it feels like.
slip of the tongue there. I'm just wondering whether you see the ACA and sort of the whole coverage issue as being sort of settled. And now we're dealing with issues of maybe on the margins and maybe under insurance and social determinants of health, that the axis, you know, the center of gravity and what we talk about with healthcare seems to have changed. And it's, you know, it doesn't seem like we're as centered on, for good reason, on lack of coverage. Do you see that, you know, when, have you noticed how you just don't talk about the uninsured as much anymore?
I think that's probably slightly true. Certainly making sure that people have true coverage is important. And at ACAP, we had actually led the charge against the Trump administration's promulgation of the what we call junk insurance, known as short-term limited duration plans. And we are concerned right now that a lot of the people who might be losing their Medicaid coverage are going to be looking for coverage and might inadvertently buy some of these junk insurance products. Sometimes people are not that forthcoming who are selling them about the limitations. And so we are strongly encouraging the new administration to come out with a regulation. And I believe it is on their, it's certainly on their list of things that they want to do, but we're hoping they will get that regulation out sooner rather than later, particularly during this redetermination or unwinding process in Medicaid. We don't want people falling into a trap of being underinsured. And so I think your point is right that certainly in states that have done the expansion and have done a lot of outreach, insurance rates are, uninsurance rates have fallen. In fact, they fell, who would have thought during COVID, uninsurance rates fell even more. But the issue of making sure that people have good coverage, and that does include low deductibles and low co-payments. I think that will be the next thing that the Congress, this Congress is not going to attack that, I don't think. But, you know, hopefully down the road, people will look for ways to make sure that people can afford the coverage. And then even when they have coverage, can afford the care.
So would you, in sort of a nutshell, would you say that the issue has sort of changed from being uninsured to being underinsured, the big policy challenge in health insurance, particularly for people in non-advantaged life?
I think that is true, but there's still a lot of people who are actually eligible for Medicaid that are not enrolled. And I'm not going to get the statistic completely right, but it's almost like a third of people who are uninsured are actually eligible for either Medicaid or subsidies. So getting people in the door who are eligible for these, that is also a piece of it. So it's, I think it's a mixture of a lot of things, making sure that affordability is a big issue, but also making sure that people know what they're eligible for and that they get enrolled.
So we've talked about the omnibus bill. We've talked about some of the Inflation Reduction Act issues and the ACA. Any other sort of regulatory or legislative occurrences that you anticipate happening in 2023 that are going to represent a challenge or a major, dare I say, inflection point? I said it. All right, I confess. Just something that, as you look ahead into this year, that is going to change the contours of where your groups operate and what they do.
Well, one of the things that we are very focused on, as I mentioned, is social determinants of health and looking for additional ways that these things can be supported. supported. Many of our plans actually pay for food support and housing support and things like that out of their own administrative dollars, where they, but in fact, they're actually being used to offset ultimately hospitalization costs. So I would think that that is something that there will be more attention to. CMS has given more latitude to states to be able to pay for SDOH. ACAP itself has come up with a proposal on the Medicare side that would allow plans that solely focus on dual eligibles to receive a higher rebate, so that, and they then use those dollars for SDOH provision. We hope to get that bill introduced this year. So that for us would be a major inflection point, giving our plans more resources to address social determinants of health. That's specific. A Medicare issue, but the bigger issue is true that we need to have more support, financial support, to address these issues.
Why is your pathway into that through the dual eligibles as opposed to the Medicaid population in general? Is that because Medicaid's a state by state thing? And
exactly, yeah. Our plans, almost all of our plans now, or more and more, I should say, are getting into the duals, and certainly that is a very vulnerable population. So that's one solution on the Medicare side, and certainly we also support states being more lenient in terms of how some of the capitated dollars can be used to address SDOH.
And so that state leniency, is that something that you work on at the state level? And does that happen through legislation, or can a health department make a determination of that? So you're sort of in discussions with the health commissioner for that state? How does that happen?
Well, at an ACAP level, we only lobby and work on federal issues. So, but we do support our plans in terms of sharing of best practices when plans like we have many plans in California, and that state has really been in the vanguard of addressing SDOH. So we do a lot to make sure that our other plans know what California is doing, Massachusetts, some of the plans that are in the vanguard, North Carolina, in terms of addressing SDOH.
The conversation about SDOH has been going on for several years now. There's some experience. Do you just have even a gut sense? It's such a big problem. I'm just wondering, is there an SDOH issue that you think has sort of the biggest bang of the buck issue to address? I mean, if you can't tackle all of SDOH, so what have you seen that might be most effective?
I think housing is really the big issue. It's such a big issue in the U.S. that there's just not enough low-income housing. And housing, it's very hard to address any health issue if you don't have permanent housing. So that is someplace that when our plans start looking for where's the bang for the buck, what can they do the most good with the least amount of investment, since they don't not being necessarily paid for this. And as you know, Medicaid dollars typically cannot be used for housing, but it can be used for housing supports. It can be used for respite care and things like that. So that's where our plans find the biggest bang for their buck.
We're in the home stretch here. One thing I just wanted to quickly discuss was high drug prices. And you mentioned that there was with the ACA, because of some provisions of the ACA, the pharmacy got sort of folded into some of the plans that your group represents. So how have high drug prices affected your members and the services that they can offer the beneficiaries? And are there any sort of policy issues or regulations that you're working on in that realm? It's just particularly the specialty drugs have gotten so expensive.
Well, as I said, we don't typically work on state level issues, and many of those are state level. California recently did go and carve drugs out of the capitation, and New York is in the process of doing it. Our plans have fought hard against that. There is a lot of concern that the plans, states again, are looking at the rebates and seeing these high rebates. But what that results often is there may be savings on, they may get more revenue from the rebates, but on a net basis, when you look at the greater use of brand drugs as a result, We have funded studies, and there are other studies out there showing it still will cost states more to carve the drugs out. Unfortunately, there's dueling actuaries, of course, and this the New York and California are proceeding. So that's one area that I think that we'll need to see what the results were. In California, it's only been in place, I think, for maybe a year now, but it's one of the things that we think is not. We don't think it's good financially, but more importantly, we don't think it's good for the beneficiary, that it's better when the health plan is responsible for as much of the whole person's care as they can be.
So even though your brief is at federal action, this is an issue that you're fighting, and you see a trend developing of carving out pharmacy benefits?
Well, we're concerned if it's a trend, and we certainly support our plans in educating each other about what's going on at their state level. That's one of the roles of our association.
Right.
Thanks for listening to this month's episode of Managed Healthcare Executives' What's on Your Mind podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify, iHeart, and Apple Podcasts, and follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.